If you want to cultivate peace, protect creation. That's the title of Pope Benedict's message for the 2010 World Day of Peace, celebrated each year by the Church on January the 1st. This year, the message explores the relationship between human beings and the rest of God's creation, calling for an urgent change in lifestyles in order to preserve our planet for future generations. Without discussing specific environmental problems or suggesting technical solutions, the Pope highlights the crisis of values that has led to the problems of pollution, scarcity of resources, deforestation, or the loss of biodiversity, calling on both developed and developing nations to take their share of responsibility and to develop more sustainable energy policies. The message was made public on December the 15th as world leaders were gathering in Copenhagen for the final days of the crucial climate change conference, attempting to find a global consensus on cutting greenhouse gases that cause global warming. While the Pope encourages research into solar energy and other scientific developments, he stresses above all the need to move beyond a purely consumer mentality in order to promote forms of agricultural and industrial production that respect the environment and provide for the common good.
He talks about the need for development, that we all need to go forward together. One country moving forward has to be able to bring the others along with it. One country falling behind pulls everybody behind.
Monsignor James Reinhardt is an official of the Vatican's Justice and Peace Council, which assists the Pope in the preparation of his annual Peace Day message. I asked him to tell us more about the choice of this particular topic for this year's message.
Well, that has gone through a process. We asked the various dicasteries what they believe should be the theme. They come up with several suggestions. We take those suggestions back to the Holy Father, and he chooses one. Now, whether or not it's because this is the 20th anniversary of John Paul's peace message on the environment, on the protection of the environment and man's relationship with creation, or whether Pope Benedict saw this time as a particular need to speak on the protection of the environment, I don't know. I don't know what was in his mind when he chose, but this is what we have.
And it's significantly coming out at the time of the Copenhagen conference going on the environment.
Yes, it's going to be very timely for practitioners, politicians, whoever, theologians, religious, to have this in front of them, especially as the work of Copenhagen continues and as the document develops and finally we get an agreement on some kind of a convention or protocol to the convention.
You mentioned there, of course, Pope John Paul II's message, peace with God the Creator, peace with all of creation. How would you say this new message develops the main themes contained in that of his predecessor?
What I see as this message is that it's a consolidation of most of the things that have been said all the way back to Pope Paul VI, who brings in then even Pope Leo XIII. So what I see in this document is a synthesis of everything that the social doctrine of the Church has said since the 1890s with regard to creation, with regard to the environment.
Is it true to say that this issue, though, hasn't been at the top of the agenda, despite, as you say, papal statements and documents on this issue going back a century?
Well, at the top of the list, no. We've had wars, we've had all kinds of other things. I think now that maybe in the last 10 years, it has become a forefront issue for the whole world. And so now it's not the Church catching up, but it's the word of the Church being spoken again and saying, here's what we have been saying. Now there's a definite need. As you go through the document, you see the urgency, and that's something that we have been hearing about for especially the last several years, that we have become, it's become an urgent situation, and the Holy Father brings that out, and he shows that the concern of the Church has been that this is an urgent message.
The document doesn't go into detail over specific issues, climate change or deforestation, for example, but it does look at the vision behind all these environmental issues, doesn't it? Just take us through it if you can.
Well, yes, you're right. He doesn't address climate change. He's addressing the environment and man's relationship with the environment and looking at it from the direction of man's relationship with creation and the created world around us, the created world in which we live. First of all, he speaks of the church teaching, as I said, that I see it as a consolidation. He speaks of as a matter of urgency, and he also speaks of that there's a moral issue here, the moral consequence here, and especially in the church's dealing with it. Then he goes into an exposé, if that's the right word, of our relationship with God, our relationship with creation through Genesis, and God's command to mankind to subdue and to have dominion over the earth, and what that means. He speaks of responsibility. He speaks of taking care of the natural environment around us. And then he speaks of the relationship that we have with one another, the universal destination of goods, solidarity. He goes back to Pope John Paul's speaking of a new solidarity, and now Pope Benedict speaks of the global solidarity that he spoke of last year in his message then. And then he speaks of the need for technology, development of technology, the transfer, the sharing of technology, and the need to change patterns of consumption and production using that technology. But then it all falls back on the morality and the ethic of all of this. And then he brings the document to a close with almost a prayer of, we need to realize this. We need to work together. We need to protect the environment in order to bring about peace. In between there, I forgot to mention that he speaks of the hardships that many people are bearing, that are already feeling with the possibility of food instability, of forced migration off land that is no longer fruitful. So he brings humanity into this. It's not just a theological, it's not just a scientific, it's a social document that says, this is mankind, this is what we need, and this is what we need to do.
How much attention do you think this will receive within the international community? Because it's fair to say that, on the whole, these environmental issues are considered as political or economic issues rather than moral or ethical issues, as the Pope is saying here.
Well, I think that with it coming out now, at this time, I think that it will gather a great deal of attention. You know, I don't know from year to year how much people take notice of these things. I know that traditionally we give copies of these in the various languages to the delegations at the United Nations. Now, if this goes to Copenhagen, if someone physically carries copies of this to Copenhagen, I think that it will make a real impact on the negotiations and the work that is going to be going on there and then ongoing.
You're talking about this vision, environmental vision, grounded in Genesis and the story of creation. But is it fair to say there's a fear, perhaps, in some circles, that the Church's vision is based on a creationist and non-scientific vision and therefore should not be part of the broad picture?
Well, we use creation to show that this is the created world. This didn't happen by chance. And we use that command of God to have dominion, but then that goes forward. And as the Holy Father mentions in this document, that he speaks of technology, and technology is a reaction also to the command of God to be fruitful, to till the earth, to bring forth fruit. So, no, it's not just a creationism understanding. There is science in here. There is an understanding, but there's also an understanding of the future, of here we are now, and here's where we want to go, here's where we need to go, and this is what's going to happen at the end time. So it's theological, it's philosophical, but it also is realistic. It brings all of these together and faces the world through the light of theology and philosophy. And the hope of the future.
My thanks there to Monsignor James Reinhardt, an official at the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace. And you can find the full text of Pope Benedict's message for the 2010 World Day of Peace on our website, www.vaticanradio.org/English. The religious organizations that have long been leading the way in the environmental awareness campaign are the Franciscans, hardly surprising since St. Francis is so widely revered as patron saint of animals and of the environment. Franciscan Father Geroid O'Connor coordinates the Justice, Peace and Integrity of Creation work for men and women religious here in Rome. He told me how the legacy of St. Francis continues to act as an inspiration for this work, 800 years after the saint from Assisi founded his Order of Friars Minor.
I think, first of all, Francis was, he wasn't an environmentalist. His whole connection with creation was through his love for God and his recognition of the presence of Christ, and that creation through Christ, the whole of creation, came into being. So for Francis, he recognized and he could sense mystically the presence of Christ in the whole of creation. And so when he saw something beautiful, it reminded him again of the beauty of God and of the, if you like, the presence of God in the world. It also reminded him that the world is a sacred place. So for Francis, it wasn't just, you know, something within a church, which is also a place to meet God, but it was very, very much out in the world, seeing, meeting the presence of God in creation and in others. And I think this, the 800 years, again, when we're reminded of Francis going to Rome to ask for permission from the Pope to embark on this life, this really focuses again. I think for Francis, he sees, first of all, his whole focus on the serving of God in the world. But I think also Francis recognized the unity of everything, the unity of creation. He mystically understood that he was a brother to not only every human being, but also to every creature. And maybe in the past, a lot of focus has gone on to, you know, the kind of sentimental aspect of Francis and his love for creation, but it went beyond sentiment. It went beyond a recognition that we are connected as human beings, not only to other human beings in a very special way, but also to other creatures. And therefore, he recognized that every creature had an intrinsic value, that the other creatures are not just there for our use or abuse, which is unfortunately as well within some traditions of our own church and reflection over the centuries has come to maybe to look at creation and look at other creatures as there to be at the service of the human being. Yes, they are there to, if you like, to enrich the quality of life of the human person. But we're noticing more and more, not only as Franciscans, but I think as Christians in general, that we are not here just to care for creation, but creation is very much, and even more so, caring for us. Because unless we have healthy, vibrant ecosystems, in other words, where there is a variety of species and where there's a variety of life, particularly it becomes even more stark, for example, in the rainforests and in the Amazon and in places like that where there's such a vibrancy of life, but in general around the world, that the more the biodiversity is decreased, the more, for example, we bring in kind of monocultures and all of that, as in agriculture and that, the quality of life is put in danger. So we as Franciscans, I think, are very much looking at trying to promote the integrity of creation, not just looking for technical solutions, because I think we need to go back to looking at what even what John Paul II was saying and what our present Pope is saying, Pope Benedict, that at the heart of the problem of the environmental difficulty is it's ultimately a spiritual problem. It's a moral problem. It's about the way that we as human beings view ourselves in the world. If I view myself as over and above the whole of creation, well, then I'm going to have a certain attitude and approach. If I, as a human, also view myself as part of and not apart from, that changes my whole way of relationship. And I think this is it. The more I feel connected and the more I feel in relationship with other human beings, with other creatures, then, and the more they, as from a perspective of St. Francis, that I feel family with them, then I'm going to feel more responsibility when I see them suffer. And it's not only for the human person. If we see so many people suffering around the world, if we truly feel connected that they and we are brothers and sisters, well, then we can't stand idly by. The same when we look at the destruction of our ecosystems and our environment, and we know that this is not only affecting other creatures, but it's also endangering and causing more suffering for so many vulnerable people. For example, in the whole climate change problem and the melting of the glaciers, for example, in the Himalayas, or in Lima, which depends on the water that runs off the glaciers, or in Mount Kenya as well, which is decreasing at a rapid level. Where is the water going to come to irrigate the land, to irrigate the land that provides food for so many people? This is where I think a lot of the development agencies are also now starting to see that we need to take the perspective of justice and peace, but look at it through the optic of the integrity of creation. Because if we don't have a healthy ecosystem, then all the plans that we work on and everything we do to try to develop and to help people are going to be washed away literally by the rising sea levels or by the desertification of the land. And then we're going to have mass movements of people coming from one country to another. For example, I mean, you look at the moment as an international community, we struggle to try to respond to natural disasters or to the displacement of peoples temporarily. But how can we even imagine responding to something like, for example, if the sea level is rising, how are we going to respond to millions of permanent refugees? Where are they going to go? Who's going to look after them? Then that brings on the whole problem of clashes between different cultures and peoples and the more scarce resources. So, if you like, we as Franciscans, we are becoming more and more aware like many other people. But I think we as Franciscans have a particular responsibility because St. Francis has been proclaimed the patron of the environment, but not only for Catholics, but for all Christians. Francis also is a key figure for men and women of goodwill of all religious traditions. And we can see that even with the call in the past that Pope John Paul made to the leaders of the church to come to Assisi. Why Assisi was chosen? It was chosen as a centre to demonstrate that, you know, collaboration for peace and initiatives are possible between people from all traditions. But it's interesting that Francis was the figure that brought them together. And I think, you know, in this area of peace, if we talk about the importance of peace and reconciliation, we have also to look very, very seriously as well at our relationship with creation. Because it's, I feel like, it's all about right relationships. I'm discovering more and more as I go through life that at the heart of the gospel and from the Franciscan message is about relationship. It's about our, you know, our relationship ultimately with God. And if we recognize the sacred in every person, if we recognize the sacred in all of creation, well, then we're going to relate in a much different way. I think even scientifically we're discovering more and more from the very beginning of when the universe came into existence and that sort of moment when there was practically nothing from just an infinitely small speck the whole universe started to emerge, you know, 13, 14, 15 billion years ago. And that out of that, everything that exists today was present in that moment. So if we can even have that understanding that everything that has been created, all that exists today, comes back to that speck, and that God is the one who, out of the relationship of love between and within God, of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, that communion of love, that that is what poured out, and that is what is poured out into the universe. And I think that, you know, that connection between science and between mysticism is becoming much more, I think, connected. What Francis understood mystically through his deep relationship with Jesus Christ in prayer is emerging scientifically, if you like, what we're starting to discover scientifically. So there's different ways of coming to know things. Francis, 800 years ago, had these insights that now, scientifically, we're starting to understand.
You're working very much to make this holistic vision much more appreciated, aren't you, by wider society?
Exactly.
Give us some ways in which you're working very practically to help bring this vision about, if you like.
Well, I suppose my focus, because working with and for religious, is to try to get religious cooperating more. I mean, this would be general, not only in environmental work, but this would be much more generally. How can we work more collaboratively together as men and women religious in the church to work for peace, for reconciliation, for the integrity of creation? And one of the ways that we're doing it is very much, for example, trying to get resources together. And we've just published a resource called The Earth Community through the integrity of in Christ, through the integrity of creation, towards justice and peace for all. And that kind of follows a method of looking at what the, first of all, seeing, because even Vatican II, when Paul VI set up the Justice and Peace Commission, he said that the task of the Justice and Peace Commission was to help the church to be aware of the signs of the times, to look, to see. So we're following that. We're looking out into the world. We're seeing what the problems are, the difficulties in climate change, biodiversity loss. We're also in problems of running out of gas and oil, which our economies have been very dependent on up until now. And we're looking at water scarcity, food difficulties and all of that. And then we're seeing, okay, from the point of view of our own tradition, from the Catholic social teaching, from the theology, from our scripture, from our, you know, the whole ethical tradition of the church, how can we illuminate what's happening today? And also particularly for religious, what we're saying to religious is go back to your founders again, go back to your traditions and try to reflect on what's happening through the optic of your charism. Then we move on to the practical things, like what can you do as an individual? I mean, and I'm not going to go into all the details because there's so many things you can do personally, as a family, as a religious community, but also not just changing your own behaviour, but maybe, yeah, starting to change by doing little things, because our practice changes when we start changing our mentality. And that's why I come back to what I said in the beginning, our whole vision. If we sense that we are connected, well, then we're going to act in a more moral and ethical way because we don't want to damage the people we love.
This hasn't been a priority for the church over the centuries, has it? I mean, it is becoming more so today.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even Pope Benedict XVI has said that we have neglected creation theology. We have neglected that whole perspective. We have focused in very much on the redemptive aspect of the human person. But we haven't seen, if you like, and this would be a very Franciscan vision as well, that, you know, through the human person as well, that the whole of creation is on a journey back to God. So that we need to also, if you like, rediscover again creation theology with redemption theology and to reflect together with both of these traditions and to make them much more unified than they have been in the past. I think there's also a lot of fear. I mean, this is maybe a whole other conversation of why, you know, as a church, that we have been slow to move into this area. I think some people have, you know, maybe afraid of some of the people who are, and some of the groups who are already involved in environmental work. Maybe some of the very harsh criticisms that have been levelled against the church, you know, accusing Christians of being responsible for the whole environmental damage. So that could be part of the difficulty as well, of the dialogue. But I think that we need to enter into dialogue. We need to enter into and open out from our perspective and our understanding, because if we're not in the debate, well, then we can't influence it.
And yet it must be very frustrating for you sometimes to see these, as you say, these conflicts of ideas, these conflicts of interest that are in fact impeding the work that needs to be done to make the church's vision, to make this holistic vision to bear on the debate.
Exactly. But one of the things I think that, first of all, we have to get our own house in order. I mean, I look at religious and I see part of the challenge. The real challenge is a collaborative mentality and it's about a conversion experience, because we as religious very often, you know, we have traditionally, you know, as missionaries as well, we have gone into places, helped to build up places, we have done a lot of work by ourselves, you know, now, if you like, I think the signs of the times and the challenges is, you know, we need to not just get up on our horse and ride out there, but we need to think before we go. We need to sit down with even our own brothers and sisters in religious life and say, this needs to be done. How can we do it together? It's not negating our own charism or what we're bringing to it, but I think if we can work collaboratively together, we can achieve an awful lot more. So therefore, we start there. Then this mentality of collaboration then is going to go out in the way that we treat and we relate to the lay people, with a whole perspective and a whole understanding that we are called as church to mission, to build up God's kingdom. I mean, that's the vision of church. Now, if we can start creating that kind of a vision, well, then it's going to be an awful lot easier to start reaching out to brothers and sisters of other faith traditions. If we learn and enter into this collaborative mentality, then I think that it's much easier to dialogue, it's much easier to listen to somebody else's point of view. It's much easier to be clear about who I am as a Christian, who I am as a Franciscan, and then to open out to others and to listen to their truth without entering into kind of conflict. Looking for what unites us, the both and, rather than the either or, which is unfortunately very prevalent. And at the basis of it really is humility. You know, and this is again a very strong value and virtue of Francis of Assisi. You know, that whole sense of being subservient, being wanting to be the lesser brother. If we can bring that kind of a mentality into the way that we treat one another, not looking for power, prestige, I think we can go an awful lot further.
And my thanks there to Franciscan Father Geroid O'Connor, coordinator of the Justice, Peace and Integrity of Creation Commission for Men and Women Religious here in Rome.